Guys, what is up? It is Tuesday night, and it's time for another episode of Inside the Game. This is episode 30 on February 7, 2012. And we had a few issues getting started here with some audio. And I was so excited that the issues got fixed that you can see that I forgot to stage our guest cam. So as I introduce them tonight, I will bring them on. Let's introduce on the far left-hand side tonight on Inside the Game, episode 30. We've got Check 6 Pain User. What's hey, up, hey. Buddy?
What's up, man?
Not much. Not How much. Are you doing?
I'm good. Glad to see Greg back in the show. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Good to back him have him back in the saddle.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. We should do this later, though.
Do what? Oh, later. Yes. Yeah, you mean just later in the day?
What time is it right now?
Yeah,
9 a.m.
Ooh,
yeah.
The plight of a gamer.
Yeah, that's like really fucking early for me.
the nine a.m. wake up.
Are you?
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Of course, introducing our second guest back. I know a lot of you are happy to have him back. It's E.G. Idra, and are you staying up late? So, I mean, is that definitely?
Yeah, I went to sleep at 4.
Okay.
4 or 5.
So definitely rocking the late night. Late night hours.
I am a responsible internet show host. Yes.
Dude, good for you, man. Good for you.
He's stealing your thunder, Wheat. You're no longer the host.
Yeah, right on. Hey, I'm
okay
with that.
I thought we were all hosts.
Yeah, exactly. We are.
This is a mutual thing.
We are. Absolutely. So, well, welcome back. I know, like I mentioned, everyone's excited to have you back. And, of course, always here with just a rosy smile on his face. Everyone say hello to... EGA Control, what's up, buddy?
What's up? Happy to be here, obviously. Like Pain User, I'm happy that Idra's on here. We've Greg, we had 2 Terrans on the show last time, so it's not even just the Protoss. GSL. What's that?
It wasn't all Protoss?
No,
well,
it wasn't.
That's state of the game, dude.
Yeah,
come
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
That's state of the game.
Don't be that guy who's just always... There we go.
That's Protoss QQ Sesh 101.
Joe's in order, okay?
Success!
All right, no, I was talking about GSL with the All Protoss thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a little crazy, man. We're going to talk about that. Tell us, we haven't heard from you in so long, Greg. What's on your mind with GSL and Korea? And I mean, I was going to wait a little bit to talk to you, but I think everyone's just excited to hear how things are going.
Well, yesterday was pretty depressing. There were Zergs in 7 of the 8 Code A matches. Spoilers for everyone. And one of them got through, and that was because Sculpt played just terribly versus Yu-Gi-Oh. I mean, Yu-Gi-Oh played good, but Sculpt fucked up pretty bad. And some of the Zergs were bad, but, like, Seal is really, really good, and I forget who else. And he played a million times better than Swirl in the first game, and just got knocked out with Protoss bullshit in the next two. So, I don't know, watching Zerg matches gets pretty depressing. We'll see how ST and Dongregu do in GSL this week.
What do you think right now, because I know it's a question certainly surging through everyone's mind, what do you think right now is sort of, we always talk about the shifting metagame and just how things are affected, but what is the toughest thing for the Zergs right now that you're seeing, why it's so difficult?
It's the biggest thing is ZVP. ZVT is always, like, hard, like, not specifically because of a metagame thing or anything, it's just... Terran has good units, and Terran really benefits from a ton of practice and stuff. So in Korea, where everyone practices a lot, they're just really, really good. But Protosses have now figured out a bunch of 2-base timings. Their control has just improved a lot. Like, when I first got to Korea, the first thing I realized was that all the 2-base timings I had kind of just written off while I was playing in North America, I was like, okay, straight warp gate timings don't really work anymore, and straight blink timings don't really work anymore. Then I got to Korea, and I realized, yeah, they do. But yeah, a combination of that and the fact that a Protoss just sits back in turtles and you don't manage to do damage at some point, the mothership deathball thingy, even if you have the Broodlord Infestor army, one good vortex you lose anyway. So even though Broodlord Infestor is a really powerful army, you can still lose at that point if you get caught once.
Yeah, and especially now that we've seen the multiple vortex coming into play, which seems to be very popular, and certainly much utility, adding that with the mothership. Comes with its own sort of risk and reward, but definitely interesting. How's the training going? That was a question that we had in our mailbox quite frequently.
Really, really well. It turns out the Koreans play ladder a lot more than I expected coming in, so I still play ladder a lot, but also we do, like, just one match. Everyone plays one match versus everyone. mini practice leagues most of the days, and when I had the GSL matches, they were like volunteering to help me practice. I didn't have to ask. So Slayers has been great. Practice in general has been great. That's one thing that I'm really, really, really happy with.
And is it in comparison to, say, during the Brood Wars days where things were a lot different, and certainly a ton has changed here in StarCraft II, but specifically with Slayers, like, how is the integration with you guys and Slayers?
It's really good. Chris still isn't here. He's staying in the OGS site, house right now, so I can't really speak for him. And JYP hasn't moved in yet because just contract stuff or whatever. I don't really know.
Okay.
But me and Puma are here, and it's perfect. Like, Puma's Korean, so it's pretty easy for him to fit in with any of them. They're all really just, like, friendly and stuff. But yeah, with me, I feel much more comfortable here than I did with either of my StarCraft 1 teams or anything else. They're absolutely great.
Excellent.
Are you working your ZVT, like, in particular, harder than the other matchups when you're there?
I was before my GSL match, because I kind of figured that me versus MVP would be what decided if I got through or not.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're in the house with MMA, Young, Clyde, and Gonzi. That's kind of what you do. But right now, no, it's just general practice. Have to kind of work on everything, because right now I'm focusing on these upcoming foreign tournaments where you have to play someone from every race. So it's important to work on everything.
Right on. All right, well, we might have a few more questions about that later on, but let's go ahead and get started with the show. I know we got some good email questions this week, some really intelligent ones. Happy to see that.
How you say that with surprise.
What? Oh, come on, dude. There's
actually
the Collins. The Collins
real
are
intelligent
where,
ones here.
No, the Collins are where the fail happens. That's where people are like, hello, can you hear me?
So yeah, at least they can't yell too much in their email. So I feel like we got some good ones. Let's move on to the first thing though. And this was actually something like Pain User was like, dude, we got to talk about this, man. We got to. He just turned his cam off. In retaliation, he's like, "Screw you, then, Weed. I'll just get the hell out of here." And he's like, "Dude, we got to talk about this. It's the scroll clicking thing, man."
Oh yeah,
Yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah, you tell us about it, and I'm gonna actually show how easy it is because I set it up in about 5 minutes and was able to do it,
so,
no problem.
5 minutes.
All right, three. I was lying. It was three in control. I'm that awesome.
All right, that's perfect then.
I was watching the Narwhal Bacon around 12 o'clock, and stumbled across this on Reddit, and it's just basically,
yeah.
And it's the Narwhal Bacon.
I got it, Taylor.
Is Narwhal Bacon supposed to be a household term or name, or what is that?
Yeah, it is.
It's a Reddit thing.
Oh, it's a Reddit
thing. Okay.
It's so faux pas. But basically, okay, so I think DJ Weed's playing the video right now.
No, I'm not playing the video. I'm actually loaded up my StarCraft on the show.
Okay.
It's like so
easy
to do.
Oh, you're going to load up your StarCraft. All right.
Yeah.
So basically what this is, as if Jeff's going to rage so hard about this, as if Terran wasn't ridiculous enough, Jeff, now you can rebind Ghost Snipe, so you can rebind your left click to mouse wheel, and if you mouse wheel with, like, say, six ghosts simultaneously, what I think happens is because mouse wheel is a built-in hardwired macro, it actually spams the key over and over and over and over again. So if you have like six ghosts and you scroll six times instantaneously, all six ghosts will fire a snipe at the same time.
That's not me that rages. That's Greg. Can you imagine Brood Lords against super fast shooting?
All right,
ghosts?
All right. Well, this is where the Zerg.
And you can repeat it as well.
The Zerg sort of gets. This is not what I.
Yeah.
This, God, these. These assholes.
Doing an infested Titan versus Protoss, sometimes it helps a little bit because they all pop out at the same time, so
yeah. The
eggs don't die.
I know it works kind of with infestors as well.
So, wait, is this... Yeah, it
here, I'll link it to you right now. I just linked
yeah,
it
yeah,
to
yeah.
you.
Find the, maybe I should have just shown the video because
yeah,
now I can't... I can't find this fucking unit test map, but like I have the application, and the application makes it so easy to rebind.
Oh, yeah.
Are you allowed to do this
yes.
in tournaments?
Yes,
Morrow.
For now, we'll see.
Morrow has right. used this like forever, but he said he never does it in tournaments because he wasn't sure if it was legal or not.
Really?
He's been using this for a long time for both Snipe
on
and
Infested Terran. Oh, and with Snipe, he knew about it with Snipe.
Here we go.
Yep. Oh wow, I didn't know that people.
So
had
he does it on ladder.
Snipe.
I'm not sure. But I know he has done it at some point. He might have just stopped doing it entirely because he doesn't do it in tournaments and doesn't
yeah.
All right.
do it.
So,
but he has known about it and used it. Yeah.
So
look at this.
He doesn't try and hide it.
All right, so basically, just to show this, there's a little application down here. It's called X Mouse Button Control. And all you do, and I'm showing this on the stream, so all you do is basically set it up to StarCraft II specifically, and wheel up and wheel down just become left click, right? So then once you're in-game and you have, like, a bunch of infestors, you can just shift and then scroll wheel click after you hit T.
By the way, when I found this, the video had 1,000 views.
And, it
and
just,
that was, like, 2 days ago.
It just all, I mean, it literally shoots out every single possible infested Terran that you can get. And it becomes even more amazing when they have, like, full energy. But it lets
oh,
you
yeah.
jump an entire thing. So the question is, I guess, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up, is what do you guys think about, is this something that should be used? Is this?
Absolutely. I think against, like, it was, Jeff said against Broodlords and Ultralisks. I mean,
no. He's talking about like the ethics of it.
Like, is it a macro? You know, do
I mean, that's an interesting question right there. Because is it going to be up to the community, or is it going to be up to Blizzard, or is it going to be up to the?
I don't know.
It shouldn't be up to the community. It should be up to like tournament organizers and professional players and whatnot. Well, one problem that comes to mind is I don't think Protoss really has anything that benefits from it. So there's a little racial imbalance there. That's like one of the actual limits that StarCraft has, or StarCraft 2 has in its user interface. You can only cast spells as fast as you can click, and you take that away too. I don't know.
It seems
kind of weird.
Do you need a third-party program to do it?
Someone in chat actually just said, like, maybe you can do it within the hotkeys of the game, but I don't know if that's actually possible to say left click is scroll wheel up. I would have to.
I feel like if you have to use a third-party program, it should be pretty insta-answer no.
Well, I think I could do it with the SteelSeries mouse drivers.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You can do anything with the SteelSeries mouse drivers, DGWE, because SteelSeries is the number one peripheral programming company.
Sure. That is accurate. However,
there's people who seem very sure of themselves for both sides in chat.
Okay, because I don't know that you possibly could. You'd have to. I guess no. You could add an alternate scroll wheel up and down. I'll try it right now. There we
Good
go.
Good lord,
he's back.
Sorry, guys. I don't know what's going on. I keep losing audio.
I don't know what's going on either. You're all over the place. So the legality of it, if you could change it in StarCraft, it would almost be like a no-brainer to do then, I feel like.
Yeah,
I mean,
much.
I think Greg makes it. Oh, go ahead, Greg, sorry.
If we're talking purely in terms of effectiveness, it's absolutely something that you want to do as Zerg and Terran. It's like inarguably good. The only question is whether it's fair or not.
It is interesting to me that there is nothing that the Protoss can do that's similar to that. I don't know if that'll change. You know what? Actually, in Heart of the Swarm, I can fucking turn every building into a photon cannon with the scroll wheel. That, never mind.
You are, like, there you go.
You
just
face, you stupid shit. Brrr! And everything's a cannon. Sick.
Where is just, I don't even know that there's a key for just where you do left click. Like, I can't find it anywhere.
Yeah, I haven't really played with the settings, so I can't imagine how you would do it. I don't know.
I'm looking, and I do not see a left click in here anywhere. Sort of like a...
Actually, you could build mass buildings that way. Like, hold down BC, and then just scroll wheel and move.
You could. I think
that would work.
That's true.
Mass buildings versus infested Terrans.
All right, so generally, we all think that if it requires a third-party program...
It shouldn't be allowed.
I think it feels really iffy, and the fact that it needs a third-party program is just a good way to excuse it.
Well, I think that it also works if you just have the mouse driver. And I think most tournaments will have, like, the Razer and SteelSeries driver.
All tournaments use drivers.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you can still execute it if you have the drivers on the computer. You don't need, like that.
Most mice have extra buttons, like third and fourth buttons and whatnot.
Yeah.
You're allowed to use those, right? Like binding
yes.
whatever you want.
I think so.
Hmm?
Then I think it would be allowed if you can do it within the drivers, like by that standard.
And I mean, at that point, then, what would you rather do? Like, have the ability to click like that so quickly or individually, you know, left clicking? I mean, again, it's.
So you'd have to choose back and forth, and then obviously you would choose, like, normal individual.
I wonder if you could bind them both. If you could keep left click bound and keep mouse wheel bound to both to the same command, that would be pretty good, actually. Because then you could just use the mouse wheel when you needed it.
I mean, I don't really have a strong opinion either way, but Greg made good points with, like, do we want this game to be simpler? One of the alienating factors of this game is speed, right? And if we keep finding little things where it's like, speed's not a factor anymore, how much of that is a good thing? So, I mean, like, if they didn't allow it, I would see the reasoning for that and I'd be supportive of it. If they allowed it, I would see the reasoning for that and I'd be supportive of that too. So, to me, it's just kind of blah.
No, that I think that's a pretty solid point because... You know, when you're talking about just being able to dump something like that or one unit with the shift button and the scroll of a wheel be able to just completely negate another unit. I mean, snipe is already amazing versus ultraless. When the snipes can come out like a fucking machine gun, then it's beyond amazing against the ultraless.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen guys spit infested Terrans pretty quickly, but... That's almost like too fast to be able to just unload all your energy. So I'm kind of with you with the sort of make it easy when it's skill that sort of separates a lot of the various tiers, and you don't want to sort of mess that up at all.
It's like gold bases. It's really good for Terran, pretty good for Zerg, and then for Protoss, it's whatever.
Absolutely useless. Yeah.
Like snipe, I can already see snipe against fucking Broodlords and Ultras, man. Because there's no cooldown on it, right? It's as fast as you can click it.
Yeah, you use this and the units just all die.
Someone said one thing you guys are forgetting to mention is the speed at which you can deselect units from hotkeys.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
That would be another usage, I guess.
That'd be really useful, and that'd be for all the races.
I'm gonna change the world.
Change the world.
And I would have said with the click of a mouse, but in this case, with the scroll of a wheel.
Well, of course, find probably many other applications for this as far as that is concerned. So let's talk about what we got coming up next. This weekend, we've got IAM Sao Paulo coming up, Brazil. And they did League of Legends today. It was a Brazil-only tournament. But StarCraft II starts very, very soon. And we've got the circuit starting to heat up with MLG coming as well. And, Greg, what is going to be your first foreign event back? Do we know?
It'll be the Winter Arena thingy in New York February 24th,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks.
Okay, right on. I don't think EG has any members down at Sao Paulo, does? Do you?
What? The Muslim was there.
The Muslim, okay.
Son?
Okay. Sorry. Woo!
Jeez.
That's why I asked, sort of. Yeah. I don't know if you should have.
Forget our second best Terran, why don't you?
And I wanted to bring up, I've got the thing up on the screen here as it comes up. Right around the corner. Started today, actually, with the League of Legends tournament. I believe that then gets broadcasted tomorrow. Moves on to StarCraft II very, very soon. But got, as always, some good players and some players that, quite frankly, I know absolutely nothing about. Partaguar, Tunko, Dacon. I don't know if you guys have heard if any of these guys have any Brood War legacy at all. That was one of the questions that I wanted to ask you guys.
Is there a player list somewhere? Because I didn't recognize
He's looking on stream.
Yeah, it's also... I mean, Phoenix qualified through the South American qualifier. Reported not to be able to participate in the main tournament. So there was some swapping. But I'm looking at the Team Liquid. Liquipedia.
Oh. Tunico, I have no idea. And Dacon. And okay, I haven't heard any of the Brazilian players, but everyone else I recognize. Who were you asking about?
Oh, I was just asking about any of the Brazilian players.
No idea.
Okay.
Get all those Zergs.
I'm surprised Killer isn't there. He's Brazilian. He was a good StarCraft 1 player, and he's pretty good at StarCraft 2.
And Jeff, you...
Killer is Chilean, Greg.
I meant recent.
He's from
Chile. All the South Americans are pretty much the same.
Why, the Zerg list is so huge. It's like the exact opposite of what we saw at the last IEM event that was all Protoss. I don't know if it's going to be the most exciting thing to watch.
Well, lots of Zerglings and Mainlings. That can be pretty exciting.
It can be, but after 50 times, it's going to be pretty much like a normal ladder session as far as I'm concerned, at least where I'm at. That's all it is EVZs these days.
Dark Force is surprisingly good. Violet has kind of a fun, aggressive style. He's been training with Team Empire for a while. Killer, kind of like Greg said. And then Slivko, I'm really interested to see. He's kind of been flying below the radar, but in Team Leagues, he's been doing really well, taking out some pretty big names. And then, of course, Rhett is one of the superstars of the foreigner scene. So the Zergs have a good list. I'm kind of interested to see the other lists. Like, we've got Supernova, who's Terran vs. Terran, is a little bit speculative. He is the only Korean outside of Violet, I guess, going to this tournament. And the big question is, Supernova is one of the superstar players, but he's kind of inconsistent, is one of the critiques against him. So does he have the chops to clean up like he should and win this thing? Illusion, 15-year-old American, American-Korean, going off to his first international tournament, to Muslim, getting off his nerves. There's a lot of really cool storylines. And then even on the Protoss side, like Feast. Feast has made his name in IEM/ESL tournaments, but was that WCG? Where was the turn we had that really good run?
It was the first IEM, wasn't it? Yeah,
IEM.
First IEM.
Yeah, what Korean did he beat? He beat Hero.
Yeah.
Hero.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll see. I'm kind of interested to see that. And everyone's kind of saying that it's really freaking hot in Brazil. A lot of guys have traveled really far. If you're going from Europe to Brazil, isn't that one of the furthest trips you can take?
Probably.
The reason Supernova is the only Korean there is because it's like a 30-hour trip, and they were all like, fuck it, we're not going.
Yeah.
Supernova was the only one who was willing to go because the trip was so long.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. So the other interesting storyline here, too, is IEM recovery. Kiev ended up going well, but it had a really rocky start. And I'll tell you what, they got to be shaking their boots because obviously it's scheduled way in advance, but if I had a rocky internet just like the logistics of the tournament, going from Kiev to Sao Paulo, Brazil, in my opinion, very scary, right? Like, bad connection, people freaking out, ears going out, all that kind of stuff.
And StarCraft 1, you just cringe whenever you got someone from Australia or Brazil. So, it's like one of the stereotypically bad internet countries.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing to definitely note that we certainly cannot, we cannot let slide, as we take a look at Group D, which is going to be the all-Zerg group, featuring Dakon, Rhett, Slivko, and Snoot.
Who dropped out? There was like... Dakon replaced somebody.
Phoenix dropped out.
Phoenix, okay.
Yeah. So, that would have thrown a Protoss.
Phoenix has his schedule just slammed chock full of stuff. He's too busy to go.
Huh. Oh, Jeff.
Dude.
I'm wondering what happened to that guy. He's so damn good, and he's been just gone. Gone.
Well, didn't he play the qualifier for this? So, I guess he's still alive. I don't know.
Let me look. Did he...
We know that much.
Didn't he get killed by drug lords or something?
Yeah.
I don't know how that worked.
First world gamer problem.
I don't know how that worked exactly. Let's see. So, it will start... I think Thursday you'll be able to watch some StarCraft 2, so make sure you check that out. Also coming up was recently announced, and certainly from Season 1, or rather Season 5 to Season 6, it was quite a big change. But now going into Season 7, the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup Series League is announced, and what was really the big news coming out of here was the fact that you had the returning teams and then several announced teams that already include Slayers, MVP, and Incredible Miracle. And then, of course, you also have the community poll, which is a pretty tight race as it stands right now. But you guys all had a part in commentating as well as playing for Greg and Jeff. So what do you think about this? Is the team league is really, really picking up popularity as we see now. NASL, IPL, EG, Masters Cup continues to do it. We've got, of course, the GSTL and some others on the horizon. So any thoughts about Season 7?
Well, team leagues in general.
Go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
Team leagues in general are just an excellent thing. A lot of people like watching them. Because it's just a different atmosphere than the individual leagues. You have the whole team spirit thing, and there's more diversity in players, too. And more often than not, you get the superstar matchups, especially with the all-kill format. Because in GSL, your favorite players get knocked out pretty regularly. But in GSTL, you're always going to have MVP put out versus Bomber in the ace match or whatever to save his team. So you get a lot of good storylines that people love to watch. And then the other thing is it's good for the industry. Everything is built off of pro teams getting sponsorships that they can then use to support players.
Sure.
And it's much easier for teams to get sponsorships off of something where they can say, look, Slayers won this tournament, not MMA won this tournament. So it's good for that as well.
Really excited about the format. Like Greg said, I think it just makes more drama and it's kind of fun. Gets more players involved, potentially. The team list is the best, if not, you know, I mean, IPL's list is really sick good, too, so it's arguable, but that is a pretty stacked roster. I like that they're including a fan vote, an audience vote for a team as well, just because it's really hard to run a qualifier, so if you're not going to have a qualifier, then in my opinion, the next best thing is a public vote, right? So it's got invites and it's got public vote. I think that's pretty cool. And then I'm really excited to cast. Like, I love playing this game more than anything else, but I also really like casting, and any chance to get to cast with, you know, DJ Wheat or you guys is an opportunity to have fun for me.
I do have one thing to mention. The team selection for Season 7, do you guys have any idea, like, how the teams were selected? There's definitely some notable teams kind of missing from there.
I have no idea, actually.
I have no idea. Yeah, we're not involved in that process.
Damn it, guys. I understand. I mean, obviously, it's...
This is a great opportunity for us to shirk the responsibility, though. That's EG management, man.
Yep.
They handle those invites. Much. So, angry emails.
Whatever.
It's really just Sir Scoots, if you think about it.
Just send it over?
Yeah.
You can tweet angry stuff at him.
Okay.
Angry stuff to Sir Scoots.
All right. We'll grill him tomorrow on Live on 3, then. How about that?
That's fine.
I'll grill him
tomorrow. To give you guys an idea of what it looks like. Like, Sir Scoots has all the teams on a wall, and he stands there with his hands clasped behind his back, completely nude, just full nude. And he looks at him, and then he just starts laughing because he knows that some aren't going to get involved. That just tickles his fancy.
And he knows that it's going to piss people off.
Yeah. He feeds on it. He's like that monster in, what's that jungle movie? Anna, what's that jungle movie?
What's the
monster made of pollution?
The jungle movie?
I know exactly, Fern Gully.
Fern Gully, he's the Fern monster.
Fern Gully.
Yeah,
I remember that movie, but I don't remember a pollution monster.
It's the swamp creature thing, the blast.
I need to watch it again, I don't remember it.
Don't watch it again, please, for the love of God.
What? That's a great movie.
Disney movie marathons are like the best thing ever.
Fern Gully along with Willow.
Oh my God, I just had all of a sudden this like flashback of like how Idra, you know, deals with maybe a tournament loss or whatever. He like locks himself in a room.
Sit down and watch
like,
Sleeping Beauty.
And not the DVDs, like Greg opens up the big
VHS.
Fat like VHS. Right. That's hilarious.
Going back to basics.
Oh, that's
Sir Scoot says he's finding us. Which is just what he would do.
So you can send him angry Twitters about that, too.
Nice. That's so funny. Moving on. This actually brought up a good email that came in to the Inside the Game at onemoregame.tv email. And that was, I mean, it was very simple. Actually, go to it here real quick. As we'll just move on to email. It says, quite simply, what do you guys think about leagues not using protected maps? It continues to disrupt tournaments and spoil results, and for...
Is that from Kennegat?
What? No.
James?
It's not from James Lampkin. No.
Well, I'll be damned.
It's a different guy. Unless he, like, literally made another Google account. We should. Dude, but obviously, it's funny you mentioned that because Kennegat was talking about this as well. But let's discuss it. I think we've kind of talked about this briefly during the original IPL. And it's turning into a problem. MLG has had some leaked results already. And what it does is it effectively kills the hype and the buzz for broadcast. So who wants to take a crack at this guy's first? Ooh. He's pissed.
Thing is, I haven't cut out yet. You guys still hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it's something that the...
Hold on. I'm sorry.
Forgive
me.
No, go ahead. It's fine.
Explain what a protected map is, because I see a lot of people in chat that don't know.
So basically, the protected maps are the maps that hide all the information from anybody who would be, you know, monitoring your account or following your account, looking at your match history and stuff like that. This is like a ghost player and ghost names and stuff like that, so people don't know what you're playing on. They can't track the results. And in the past, like you said, with IPL...
Sure.
Man, that point you just made right there, Wheat.
I think that was probably one of the best points, really, that
just
anyone could have made. So actually, you cut out, Pain User. Pain User is visibly pissed off.
The funniest part about Pain User too is the way he talks. Is there's like, well, I, you know, I mean, what I feel like, what I feel like, what I'm, you know, what I want to say is like, I think that when you get to it, and there's like,
oh, I'm sorry.
Like Billy Madison. Hey, Junior.
Let's try it again, you guys. What do you guys think?
I don't think there's going to be any kind of differing opinion. Like, I'm pretty sure we're all going to agree that if a tournament gets played on maps that people can view, it's a huge oversight by the team or the league, excuse me, and it's bad. I mean, the problem, I guess, that you could run into is that not every map is published with a ghost version. So if I'm training for IPL, NESL, MLG, and the various other leagues and the different map pools that they all have, some of those aren't on ghost maps, and when the league comes out, they don't have ghost maps to be offered. So
people are still wondering what is protected, and it's the results, guys, like the results. You know, I can look at someone's profile on Battle.net if you know who the player is, and you can see that they won or lost or they played X amount of games, or, you know, sometimes even the replays would get leaked and then people can farm the data from the replays. So it strips the ability to get some of that. But frankly, it just hides the results. So for a lot of these leagues, go ahead.
What do you guys think about, like, on a deeper level, why do you think that any of this information should even be available? Like,
dude, no.
Don't you guys think that it would
really...
It really shouldn't at all. I don't understand why it's necessary. There isn't.
But that's like, I mean...
No, there isn't, man. I really don't think that you should be able to look up people's match history, go through their recent build orders, check what maps they've been playing, see who they've been playing with, get their exact build order down to the T, up to X amount of supply. I mean, it's ridiculous. We have to, as players, go through all these shoots and ladders to avoid people just seeing the most simple information and, you know, play with people on different maps and use different strategies at tournaments so people don't know exactly.
But I could watch all the highest level players stream anyway. I mean,
yeah, but that you choose to do that or not. Like, I decide if I turn on my stream,
right.
And when I do, I don't play anything that is going to be sensitive. Like, I'm not practicing on tournament maps, and I'm not practicing any build order that people don't already know about. But with this, like, you have to go through all of the hoops he was talking about in order to protect what should be private practice. Like, there's no good reason for it to exist and plenty of reasons for it not to.
Well, and I know we've discussed it before. In Control, you have any thoughts to add to that as well?
I would just want to emphasize it. Like, it's kind of interesting, culturally speaking, a lot of the Americans I work and train with, including the EG guys, we don't really spend time looking at other people's match list and their build orders and their tendencies, that kind of stuff. But when I was, the short time I was in Germany for Homestory Cup, it's like a huge European thing. They like even Sock was like, yeah, leading up into this, I checked all your builds in all your games. And I was like, what the shit? And I don't think that that's a good thing. Like, on the one hand, yeah, it rewards the guy who spends the time to get that information, but there's just too, it's just too readily available.
Yep.
So what a lot of players do is they buy other accounts. They smurf things. And I think it's a shame where we have to have multiple accounts that we spend money on to play at a competitive level. Like in Brood War, I could just go make another account and nobody knew about it. And I would, you know.
You know, and Greg said, you know, I choose to turn on my stream, but I can't choose to hide an account, or if it gets discovered, there's no rehiding it. Do you think we're to the point now where Blizzard needs to seriously consider doing something like, I flag your account. You are a player in this scene. Your account has to be flagged so that your information isn't held, or there is some sort of level, you know, in order to benefit the competitive arena rather than hurt it.
It'd be really nice, but it's. I feel like we're talking about, like,
impossible.
Could we have
task.
A Ferrari? That'd be really cool. Yeah. Wouldn't it be cool to have a Ferrari? Blizzard has, or they've shown that they don't give a shit on the bigger issues for the most part, unless it hurts their dollar sign. I don't think they're going to go out and protect the pro gamers with this kind of thing.
No, we just keep buying accounts to try and fix this problem. So yeah. Like, they have no reason to.
Well, then if you,
the bigger thing. The bigger thing is, I agree with Pain User. I don't see why there's any purpose for this to exist at all. Like, a lot of the features that kind of annoy me, I can see how a casual gamer might enjoy it or might like it. But where does anyone benefit from having anyone's match history public? Except the people who, like, stalk pro gamers and just try and talk about it.
Right.
Like, there is no value to it.
Right. Now, on the flip side, if they had a toggle just to make it private, which we've talked about before on the show.
That would be awesome.
Is there any reason why it wouldn't just be on by default? And then is there any reason why someone would actually turn it on?
Yeah, it'd be cool. Like, if you are, like, a big coach, or, like, one of the things you could advertise is, hey, my builds are made available. Go check them out. But right now, it's, like, big fucking deal. Everyone's
That's
builds are open.
That's a good point that I hadn't thought about, actually.
A cool little PR thing you could do.
Sure. Good point. All right. Well, hopefully, Joe, that answered your question. We've got another. I mentioned that we had some intelligent email come in, and so Chris Mortz writes the following. He says, "Hey, I'm currently writing my BA thesis on some linguistic characteristics from live commentary in esports, especially StarCraft II. Pain User, for example, is one among others I've analyzed some commentary from."
Uh-oh.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, that's scary.
But here's the question, actually. My question is, what is something you, all three or four of you, would like to see to be academically investigated in relation to esports or StarCraft II? And then he gives some examples. He says, for example, it could be related to any field whatsoever. Medical, what happens in the brain while playing? Or business, what is the actual value of a typical player for a sponsor, or something totally different. Like, I came across a paper that investigated the role of the spectator audience in a StarCraft match. I think it's a great idea.
I would actually, for purely selfish reasons, I would really like that second one that he mentioned, the investigation into the actual value, the worth of a player. Because every time I go into negotiations or we're trying to talk about something, I'm kind of like, well, I think I'm worth X, maybe.
Sure.
I have no real support for it. I think that would be really, really good for the scene. I'm not sure how teams try and judge players' value if they're doing the same thing. I'm sure they have more numbers, but I don't know what kind of concrete idea they have of our value. It would be really, really cool. I would just be interested in it, but it would also help me a lot.
As far as the value goes, too, it could also be a measure and a scale for what prize money needs to be. Because honestly, right now, our prize money does not match the value of our players, and that's a problem. Jeff, you were going to make a comment.
Well, I was going to say, like, it'd be, on the one hand, I'd be really excited about the information. I think it's really cool, and it's, in the hypothetical future, it'd be accurate. But the danger is that what we're worth and what a tournament's prize pool needs to be for the value of the players doesn't necessarily reflect what they can do. So it could create this weird situation where
that's
players
true.
Are like, I'm actually worth more money than you're paying me. And the team's like, this is all I can give you. And no other team's going to offer that player anywhere near what they're actually worth. So then it kind of creates this weird situation where they always have a chip on their shoulder, or a league or a tournament. It's like, here's what the prize pool should be based on the players you have in it. And they're like, well, I can't, where do I get that money from? And they're like, I don't know, but now you're a shit tournament. You know, so it's...
Right.
I think the fact that if the value was actually that high, no team, except maybe EG, and no tournament could really afford it. So I don't think it would cause that much of a problem, just because people would know they can't get that money anywhere, so they just have to deal with it. And that is how it is.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's still a dangerous scenario. Like, I don't think it's a thing that we shouldn't have. I'm just saying, if I knew that I'm actually worth $5,000 a month, based upon how much attention I bring to the team and whatnot, and stuff like that, then whatever salary I get, I'm always going to be saying, well, you know, I'm worth more than that. I can do more. I'm worth more. And at some point or another, it's going to cause tension, I would imagine.
I would throw out there that I would love to see an actual, you know, some sort of charted analysis of what the lowest effective APM would be to be successful. And that may seem a little weird, but my question would be, like, at what point can APM not be an issue and complete decision making, and or, you know, in relation to speed and efficiency, I guess, like where that threshold is, I guess, where they meet. I don't know. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, but it seems like it'd be really hard to define, like, at what point is someone successful? Like, is
you're right.
Successful, because he does it with, like, 70 APM.
And you probably couldn't
cross players like that.
Compare it across the races either. That'd be really hard.
Yeah. But, like, you bring Goody to Korea, and he's not really gonna have much success, so then does he still count or not?
Right. So, right.
Poor Goody. You media guys picking on Goody.
All the time. And I don't know if you have anything else. Any other cool studies that would?
Oh, I'm going to be interested to see what they come up with analyzing pain users' commentary.
Me too.
I'm actually kind of curious.
What? Here's an interesting case that you could do: California speakers and how much they use the word "like" versus the rest of the world.
Uh-oh. Even Tasteless and Artosis give me crap for that all the time. I just can't escape it.
A9 plot, my friend.
Can't escape it.
All over that. All over that shit. So, pain user, the question was, is like, oh, hold on. Let me bring it back.
I think I fixed it, by the way. I think I got it.
That's good news. The question was, what would you like to see academically investigated in relation to esports and StarCraft? And he gives the example, like, what happens in the brain while playing, or for business, what is the actual value of a typical player for a sponsor? Which we already talked about, that actual one. But anything that comes off the top of your head, like a study that would be cool to... You know.
I would love to see a psych profile on the different types of players. So, like, categorize players by, I guess, like, cheesy, straightforward macro, people who can do both, people who can play straightforward macro who are also super cheesy, and try and break down, like, different psyches based on people's playstyles and see where different personality types fit in with different...
Do you think that definitely really patterns would be discovered?
Oh, of course. There would. Yeah, I mean, anyone who's played at a competitive level knows it's like, all right, this guy's personality type, like...
This guy's a little shit.
He's a little shit. He's a little cheesy motherfucker. Like, you know, like, you can just tell that... And I think it would be really interesting if somebody actually did a study on it and, like, broke it down by race... And then, like, by different play styles within the race, and just see how different people's personalities meshed with the different races and the different play styles. I think it would be really cool.
Yeah. You know,
awesome study.
By that matter, even by race, I wonder if there's anything.
I think they did one in Korea by race in StarCraft 1. I forget if it was just, like, a community opinion thing or if it was an actual scientific study. But there was a lot of discussion about that.
I could see them pulling off a scientific study as far as that was concerned.
I just think it would be really interesting.
It would be. I think it'd
be
really interesting.
And I wonder, like, if there's you know, something to it, if they could draw any conclusions about, you know, a specific race and a personality type, or a play style and a personality type. That would be really cool.
I know. You would definitely fit the Terran pain user. There's no doubt about it.
Is that Terran, another drug joke?
Terran Bass.
So I don't know what kind of a joke it was. I just
sweet gosh.
God. All right. Well, what do you guys think? We take a quick break. When we return, we're going to open up the phone lines as we always do here on Inside the Game. And thank you very much for the questions that continue to pour in. Sorry we can't get to all of them, but definitely want to have. And by the way, we got confirmation. Someone said that you can achieve the scroll wheel. He calls it a scroll wheel bug, but I just think it's sort of a macro function on the Razer driver. So far it's been confirmed that you can do it on just about every driver that's out there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Anyway.
Well, if even a Razer product can do it, then everybody else can.
I suppose in control. All right, guys. We'll take a quick break when we return. Inside the Game continues with open phones. Don't go away. We'll be right back. What's up, guys? We're back for our second half of Inside the Game. As you can see, it looks like we've lost Pain User again. The techno music starts, and suddenly Pain User's just like he's out. He like raves himself right out of the show. So we'll go ahead and open up the phone lines regardless, and hopefully we'll get that fixed, and the Noodle Girl will stay. So you can Skype us at DJ Weed or telephone 909-581-8519. Man, Taylor. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. But phone lines are now open, and we'll let that get out. Tomorrow's live on 3, of course. And, all right. We have... we have JP, not the JP, just maybe a
another
different
one.
JP, another JP joining us here. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, I'm here to talk about more of the macro buttons. And obviously, that seems a little bit dodgy, you know, sniping like that. But what do you guys think of just regular macro buttons? I mean,
none of them use this.
What do you mean? Like macro buttons applied to what?
He's got the Pain User internet.
I don't know if he's...
All right, yeah. Here's the Protoss.
The crank modem bond, with the hamster. Like if I bond an electric shock therapy.
Caller, sorry. Can you hear them?
Oh dear.
Yeah, he lost. He's out.
His hamster died.
Sorry. All right. What do you, well, let's just, well, maybe
I think
JP
what he's asking is like on keyboards and the thing that
got
in trouble for.
Yeah.
You have buttons that are like bound to actions.
You can hit Shift F5 and it creates 3 supply depots, a racks, throws down a tech lab, then builds some marines, moves them over here, checks this expansion, and then returns back to your base. It's like, I don't know about that shit. That seems a little sketchy. I think that's just auto, like... No.
They're just bad.
Yeah, they're never allowed in anything as far as I know.
Yeah, so sorry, JP. I know what you really want to go off. Let's do Unknown phone number. Welcome to Inside the Game. Hello, what's up?
Hey, I had a question for everyone.
Okay.
I was wondering what you thought about the viability of Ultralisk.
The what?
The viability of Ultralisk.
Oh.
Well, what about it specifically?
They're not.
How do you feel they do in every matchup specifically? Like DBT, I'm a Hymenmaster Terran, and I have a lot of trouble against Ultralisk.
Idra, what do you? I can see
they're not as absolutely terrible as the internet seems to think versus Terran. They're pretty bad, but they do work on occasion on some maps. Like on Antigua, you're seeing a lot of Zergs go Ling and Fester into Ultra right now because Mutiling Bane is so bad on there. But if you go Ultra, then you kind of hit a timing where you prevent their fourth, and then you fall back defensively. If you use them in conjunction with Banelings, Lings, and Infestors, they can be okay if you engage in good areas and you already have an advantage. But they're not. They're not something that's going to swing the game in your favor, or like they're just not. They're not great units. They're okay units. Ember's Protoss.
Yeah, I didn't think that they were as bad as Destiny thought, because I thought it was kind of weird how he always goes for kind of upgraded Ling and Fester style, and then switches into Broodlords instead of Ultras. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think going into Broodlords is better 99% of the time. Occasionally on a map like Tal'Darim, where it's just so big your Broodlords can't get to where they need to be, then Ultras might be better. But honestly, I think just going Master Mute is better in those situations anyway.
All right, thanks a lot.
Well,
go ahead.
I'm
going to
add my
your opinion, please.
I got my 2 cents ready.
Please.
I feel like one of the kind of cool things about Ultras is I think they need more babysitting than people give them credit. I don't want to say that Zergs sometimes get stuck on the idea of just A-moving and then macroing behind it, but Ultralisks, I find, benefit a lot from being spread out and allowing their area of effect to really be used. Otherwise, they do the Congo line thing where they're just like, move out of the way, and then he dies to two marauders.
Right.
He's like, thank you for that space, and he walks forward. But there's some Zerg players that do a really good job of spreading them out and then using them to tank damage and then having Lings come in before or after, either way, depending on what you're going for. But they're pretty cool if you babysit them, is what I'm trying to say.
They do need a lot of active usage. You have to have queens there transfusing them, and you have to have infestors fungling the bio so you don't get kited to death, and you have to have the other units come in and support them. So they do need to be actively managed, and that does make them a lot better if you do that.
Yeah, I kind of think that people are trying to use them too much without support, like Infestors and Banelings and Lings. So I think Ultralisks might see more use in the future as players get better.
Good answer, man.
Thanks.
Ultralisks and Fungal is really good against Terran, too, and then Banelings. You know.
I don't understand why they don't take the Ultra and make it slightly smaller and possibly give it a speed upgrade.
I feel like what it needs to do is be able to dig underground and then jump up below other units and stun
just
them.
Just obliterating.
Yeah.
And then
create
a little hole in the ground that units can then fall into and die afterwards as well.
Well, yeah. Jeff was alluding to
And your
to
units can climb
of
out of, like an Autonidus. Yeah.
Jeff was alluding to Heart of
We already have
storm.
The Burrowing Claws.
Hang on. Wait for it. They fall in the hole. Hold on. They drop into another game, so you're playing this random other Zerg. Fucking
Zerg is the hive mind.
Yeah, they drop down in the game, and it's it's completely random because I know Greg likes random shit. So the tank drops down at minute 6, and Greg's like, "God damn it! I wish I wouldn't have used that digging Ultralisk 2 games ago." Ah, shucks, you know. Think of how cool that would be. How
the
exciting.
The mental image that I got was just totally awesome. I just saw units just falling in the middle of some other fucking
What's
map.
Up, bitches? This is DJ Wheat, and I'm bringing you another top-level match between I Am MVP and Idra, and we're going to start off in the bottom left. Holy shit! 4 tanks have just dropped out. Greg played that game a week ago. They're laying waste to his drones. The game's over! So good. And Greg just stands up and shakes hands like that was crazy. Who would have thought the tanks would have dropped out of the sky like that? It's fucking
Oh my god.
damn it!
Do you seriously think they would be more viable, though, like, if you reduce their size and gave them a speed buff?
I was like, if they fall from the sky, yeah, I think that would help a lot. obviously that would make them a lot better. One of their bigger problems is mobility and, like, blocking stuff from attacking and all that.
Yeah, like what's cool? What is cool and fun about having a giant lumbering unit that does nothing? Like, why is that cool?
That it looks big.
Can we get back to the topic about things dropping out of the sky?
We need to be able to call down siege tanks out of the sky at any point in time. And Ultras.
Like, no, seriously, what do you think about a smaller Ultralis?
I seriously think that would be awesome.
They keep more from Zerglings.
Yeah, well, no. What?
They're more from Zerglings. Yeah.
Issue fix. It's like the size of a roach. But it's the size of a roach, but it has all the same stats.
All right. Caller, thank you for your call.
All right, thank you.
I realized, like, after the mayhem that just occurred there, that he was still on.
All right, we're going for webcam operational. I'll be right back. Attempt number 5,000.
Okay.
Here we go.
Go for it. Okay, now that he's gone, I just want to say for the record that it is annoying the shit out of me every time he leaves because I have to move this Skype window and he doesn't understand that it's like, it's basically like keeping a target trained on a rabbit that's running around a field. What's up? You back? I get it. I got your webcam, dude.
We're in business. Definitely.
We are so golden, dude. You have no idea. I'm sure it's gonna fix or work for like 30 seconds. But all right, let's take another call here. We're gonna take Bryce's call. Hello, Bryce. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Wait a second. Hello, Bryce. There's another Bryce on this planet?
There actually is another Bryce. We're talking to the other one.
Holy shit.
I don't know.
How do you feel about having the name Bryce? Like, what is that like?
Well, I'm a huge EG fan, so I guess that's pretty cool.
Thank you. All right, that's all I had to say. I appreciate that. I think every Bryce should be an EG fan.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess I had a question kind of directed towards Idra. Looking back at a few months ago, PVZ was, like, really, really bad. It was really hard for Zerg. And so I was just wondering if I could get your thoughts on how you think it has evolved since then and how it is now.
I assume you mean back at, like, the Colossus Deathfall destroying Roach Hydra phase. And
yeah.
Then since that, Infestors got buffed a lot. And that meant that if you kept a death ball, if you just sat there with your army all in one hotkey, you got fungled and you died in like three or four chain fungals. So Zerg kind of won a lot until Protoss has figured out Templar tech and motherships and stuff. Infestors got nerfed as well. So then Protoss started winning. That's pretty much what happened.
You have a follow up to that, Bryce?
I guess one question I was thinking about, looking to the future of this year in esports and all the tournaments coming up, what is one player you guys think will kind of break into the top tier of players who hasn't really done well so far, but you think will do well, and who's one player who has done well, but you think will kind of fall off?
Ooh.
Symbol and Steel.
Oh, go ahead, Greg. Koreans.
Symbol and Seal look pretty good in some of their GSDL matches recently. I think they're like two of the up-and-comers I'd like to watch. Their Symbol's game versus Seed was really impressive. I don't know about Make It, because Make It's a pretty big leap from... They look really good, but they look really good.
Jeff, what were you about to say?
Well, hang on. Greg has to give his favorite answer. Greg gets to talk about someone who was doing well and is going to drop off the face of the earth. This is something Greg talks about freely anyways.
See, the problem with these...
Just one?
Yeah. The problem with doing these on the spot is there's like so many of them. Who do I pick?
He's got to go to the hat that has all the little pieces of paper that he can just pull out.
Marine King has to disappear eventually. All of the Koreans actually agree with me. They think he wins because he plays dumb, so it's like unpredictable. And all the foreigners are on his balls, and it really needs to stop. But he's going to disappear sooner or later.
Ooh, man.
But we love you, Greg. Answers like that. You just actually picked Marine King. And the worst part about this for me is Greg's fan base will actually go to war with the Reddit Marine King fan base, and they'll fucking win. They will crush those fans.
I think Jen Jen's like not talking to me because you just said that. I think she's like, I think she's actually ignoring me now just by association that you said that.
Okay. I'm obviously like I've said this a million times. I really think the Muslim's going to have a big year. A big part of the reason why I keep picking him, and just this is full disclosure, we'll no fluff it live on three a little bit. He is one of the most talented and best players on the scene, but he has demons in his head. Because he's such a good player, he knows what the expectation is of him, and he knows the hype around him. It gets in his head in a lot of these tournaments, and he starts psyching himself out. He starts finding excuses for why he can't win and stuff like that. So we know this, we being EG, and he knows this, and we're working on it. But I feel like if he overcomes that hurdle, he is the next big foreign player that's going to start crushing down tournaments. So I'm really excited about that, potentially.
That's a pretty difficult hurdle.
Yeah, that's a shit-bad hard hurdle, man. And then a player is going to drop off. This is that kind of question we answered one of those other times.
It is. Who do you want to fall into the pits of hell? And then people are like, oh, my God, these guys hate him. But the funny thing is no one can probably remember any of our answers. But anyway.
No, it's like one day of savage anger, and then they're like, whatever.
Yeah, it was like the overrated.
And they have something else to be angry about.
Yeah.
No, it was who do you think should be less popular?
Yeah. That one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did we get in trouble?
That part bothered me, too, because so many people ran from this show and like tweeted at Rotterdam and Bitter like, just talking shit. A week later, I show up to Home Story Cup and I'm like, just so you know, did you watch the VOD? And they're like, yeah, everything's fine. I was like, thank God.
Yeah.
So it was almost awkward. Anyways, one player, I guess, who would fall off. I guess the easy answer is like Cruncher, right? Because he's not even playing anymore.
Didn't he try to come back and then just not?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he's officially retired, I believe.
He's done.
You can't give an answer like that. That's copping out.
Officially retired.
Answer. And this is actually a pretty logical one. He's a friend of mine. I like him. Okay, let me get that out there. It's Destiny. He started to stream more LOL.
Right.
Didn't he make comments about how LOL requires more skill than
yep.
SC2 or something?
He said, at high levels, Greg.
At high levels. Not
that important part, okay? Don't you misquote him. At high levels,
really?
LOL is more difficult than StarCraft 2.
I mean, by that logic, I mean, that's so ridiculous because World of Warcraft is essentially League of Legends, but each character has, 40 abilities as opposed to 4. So WoW Arena is infinitely more complex than LOL, and it's a completely different genre. You can't even compare them. LOL is, the most simple form of those games that there really is.
Let me just end by saying that I would love it if Destiny kept doing what he was doing, which was training with his team and working to get better at StarCraft 2. Like, I really liked following that story. He's a fun guy. He's really he's a character. But he is not playing StarCraft 2 anymore, and he's talked about how he doesn't like it as much and stuff. So the logical answer is Destiny will fall off. Because if he doesn't play StarCraft 2, I can't imagine StarCraft 2 fans watching him play LOL as much as they watch him play StarCraft 2, right?
I mean, unless he gets on a team and makes a transition, there's no doubt that there's steam in the LOL train that's moving through.
LOL train.
I think that there's probably something to be said about a certain skill level in StarCraft 2 that could probably translate over to League of Legends quite well. I mean, I watched Huck play that game, dude.
Absolutely. Well, no, Huck is phenomenal at MOBA games in general. He's really good at Han. He's really good at Dota. I've played with him. He's just really good at that whole genre of game. Extremely, extremely high level. So I wouldn't say that he's a StarCraft 2 player that transferred over. He's been really high level at both since I knew him. But I think just being a competitive gamer in general sets you up to play any game competitively, you know? I mean, sure. You've been playing games forever too, right? You can pick up a new a new PC game, say a first-person shooter with all the Quake experience, and then all your StarCraft experience helps even more if it's a new game, just because you're so adept at like learning skills and what they do and what works.
Yeah, I mean, it lets you auto-hit a level, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee you access to the highest level, I think is how it works. You know, we've seen even multi-genre gamers like Sturmy and stuff, you know, like excel in different games. But have they truly ever mastered multiple games? Like, that's kind of it. But I don't know. I mean, going back to the original thing, I would say that's kind of a safe hit. And I don't know that we're ever going to get to hear pain users. I think I would agree with Idra a bit on the up-and-comers. I think the harder one is kind of the falling off, because this year certainly we're going to see a lot more people. Actually,
unacceptable answer. What? Unacceptable. Greg said, and then I'm not going to answer the hard one?
No, I never said I wasn't going to answer the hard one.
Oh, so you're doing this whole, like...
I was going to... No! Hard. God damn it, Jeff. Would you let me finish, you son of a bitch? I realize you're just using a debate tactic on me to try to throw me off and sort of cross X, but listen here, buddy. Because I think that there will be more people falling off. I think that we'll probably see new talent coming in. I think, like, if I think about it completely, like, who is going to, you know, really have a hard time? Let me think about this a little bit. Pain user, are you back?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm probably gonna get disconnected. I don't know what's going on.
You better give your answers quick.
All right. I believe the question was a player that you think might fall off, or players that you think might fall off, and a player that you think might come up in the future.
Yes, that's correct.
I think the younger generation of guys like Kawhi Rice and Poke Bunny that have good mechanics, that got into it really young, and that have been exposed to this whole competitive gaming thing at such an early age, are going to have a huge advantage in latter years if they keep it up and they keep playing through high school. Once they finish high school and, you know, they can make a decision on whether or not they want to go to college or if they want to just get hardcore into it, I think they have a tremendous opportunity ahead of them and a huge leg up on anyone else that got into it later. That being said, I think players that could potentially fall off, I hate to nip on Jeff's answer, but a Destiny or a Cats, players that, in my opinion, rely on a lot of, like, really gimmicky strategies and not so solid gameplay, albeit it works. They do make a lot of really interesting plays. They come up with really interesting strategies and unique stuff. But I think in the long run, once players figure out those timings and the way that they play and they develop an understanding of the way that they play, it makes it a lot easier to play against a player like that and just keep things safe and just try and stay one-to-one with them in macro or just slightly ahead. So I think players that have a play style like that will slowly fall off, and I think players that rely on mechanics and macro and practice hard and are young are going to be great in the future.
So, but, I mean, we've already seen sort of some young champions come out, but, I mean, isn't that generally like kind of a blanket statement for all games, sort of as we see them evolve?
Not necessarily. I think the younger generation, especially in StarCraft II and in RTS games in general, just because the game is so demanding and so taxing that I personally, when I was younger, could play a lot longer and a lot more with a lot more focus and a lot more intensity than I can now. And I think that they're just capable of growing so much just because they have so much free time and so much less responsibility that they're able to just play that much more. That being said, I mean, there's people in Greg's position who have a team that takes care of them and pays for their expenses so that they can play as much as they want. So I feel like Greg's in a very unique situation, especially for a North American player, because that's really rare. Jeff as well.
All right. As far as going back to my answer, players that are falling off, I think the ones who are actually most at risk of sort of the top level that have been there, not even necessarily in StarCraft 2, but, you know, Nada leaving a team, when I first heard that. That was definitely, to me, a sign of probably bad things rather than good things, like maybe all these opportunities that could come up, and I could be totally wrong. But the other one, who I think we're probably going to see sort of fade away a little bit, which makes me sad because I loved him during Warcraft 3, is Moon. I think that he probably sort of outlived his hype a little bit, and even though he had some wins, there's just so many good, as Pain User was saying, reiterating, the young thing is just automatically a part of it as we have new players coming in, etc. And I just think there's too many new ones. And I'm not sure he's given his 100% in that. So that's kind of how I would look at it as well. So, caller, we've had you on for a long time. Thanks a lot for the call.
Yep, thanks. All right.
Peace. Yeah, that was one call, actually. Let's take let's take another one here. We've got area code 570. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Were you yelling at someone when I picked up the phone?
Yes, I was.
Oh, that's okay.
I did not expect to be getting on right now.
That's okay. Was it like your wife or like significant other? Like, bitch, I'm calling Inside the Game. Like,
let's not talk about this. Let's just move on.
Let's move on.
Question to Adrian and in control as well. With the recent Day 9 Daily about Xenio doing his Ling Hydra into Mask Mutilus, what does Andrew think about the viability of this, as it seems to shut down a lot of the Stargate 2-base all-ins, or not all-ins, but just openers, and a lot of these gateway plays seem to be really strong right now?
I saw him do it once. It was first at Protoss. He played on IEM at Tal'Darum. And he ended up winning. Oh, it was versus Naniwa. It was just because Naniwa handled base trade absolutely horribly. It's not a particularly good style. It's okay for the current meta game, because Protosses do so many 2-base all-ins, particularly Immortal and Stargate-based stuff. Obviously, you get a bunch of Hydras. That's pretty much the best way to survive that. But if Protoss recognizes what you're doing, they just sit back. Hydras aren't very good offensively because they're so slow off-creep that even... You know, even when they counter an army, if you get them off creep, you split them up with force fields, you kind of destroy them. So you don't really have a lot of aggressive potential. Protoss realizes that, they sit back, they macro up, and then you go mutas after investing a bunch of gas into Hydras. So they're pretty impotent. It seems to be like
he's using it almost as a net. Basically, you just have the Hydra den, and you don't really make Hydras unless you see him pushing across the field. If he's going to leave you alone, you kind of just double expand off your 2 bases.
Or he moves out, you make 10 Hydras, then he runs away because Hydras can't do shit off creep.
Right.
I think one of the things we're seeing a lot too is like mutas coming at weird times work. Because the mutatech in and of itself is kind of a influx style right now. So I know personally I've seen like mutas come after Ling and Fester really threw me off because I was like, what the shit are they doing here now?
Honestly, what Korean Protosses are doing, just because mutas come at a random time, but they almost always come now. Occasionally, you'll get just straight Roche from Fester and Turtle into Broodlords, but mutas happen like 90% of ZVPs right now. So most Korean Protosses are just leaving a couple of cannons at every base and having their Blink Stalkers in a position where they can react to anything if they aren't needed somewhere else.
And you're seeing a lot more compositions that are more like Stalker Sentry, Zealot into Templar, Immortal is the part I've forgotten there. And because that army is like the all-encompassing army. Whereas if you show up with 6 Colossus and the dude has 30 mutas or whatever, you're like, well, this is great. So it's kind of the metagame thing right now. It's just that mutas come at weird times and it's having great results because Protoss are still trying to figure out how to do that.
It just seems like Protoss doesn't really have a huge, awesome response to it. Even if they get the Archons, the Colossus, but the cannons, everything. The moment they step out of their base, if it's like a 70% force, if you have a crazy death ball of mutalists, you can just throw them away because you're just mass expanding across the map. By the time they get there, you could have broods, whatever. I mean, I've made upwards of 80 mutalists, just throwing them away at my opponent. Whatever damage I'm doing is basically sticking if I'm keeping them on 3 bases.
But you should really never throw them.
Not necessarily. I mean, it goes both ways, right?
Yeah, you throw away that much gas, you're going to be in trouble no matter what. Yep. Like, if Zerg has 5-6 bases...
Gas.
If you're on 5 bases...
You're just playing someone bad, to be honest
gas,
with you.
Bad happens.
But even still, like... Game. even still, mutas are such a dicey fighting unit. Yeah, you're throwing him into a situation where you can base trade anytime he leaves, but the toss player, if he's good, isn't just going to get suckered right into that. He's going to delay for upgrades. He's going to slowly expand towards your base while cannoning everything up, and just he'll be very slow and methodical about where he wants to take the game. He's not just going to push out and give you the free base trade.
Yeah, base trades can work, but if you play someone who's good, they're going to have a 3-3 pretty much invincible death ball trading with you, and their base is going to have 5 cannons and 2 Templar, or at least 1 Templar with 2 Storms at every mineral line. So, I mean, base trading is a good tactic. It works quite a bit, but it works because Protosses largely have not reacted perfectly to it yet, and they're getting much better at it now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's just the nature of the game.
I feel like in a way, the Zerg player, if he chooses to go Muta style against Protoss, is, like, forcing the game into that, like, really hectic style of play. And the
Which
more
I think is way better than it coming down to one spell, like we all know.
You mean like one big battle?
Right. Like, I mean, that's what you're basically forcing. If you go Death Ball Z style versus Protoss, you're going to be fighting the Vortex. So you have to spread out all your Broodlords, all your Corruptors, depending on the map if it's viable or not. It just seems like Mutas is a better choice to say, hey, we're going to throw this game into a shit fest, and we're going to see who comes out on top based off of, you know, counterattacking this and that instead of just here comes the mothership. Like,
it depends a lot also on the map and how much experience both players have in playing that style. Like, Greg, which style do you prefer more against Toss? Because I'm sure you're versed in both.
Yeah, those are pretty much the two main styles, particularly for me, pretty much for every Zerg right now. It's really, really map dependent. If you have something that can be split easily, then Broodlord Infester and like stupid amounts of spines is probably the best style. When something that's big and spread out, then obviously the Muta, the counter style, is better. But I think overall, Broodlord Infester Turtle is the better style. You can go Mutas into that, but more often it's ground into that. I feel that's much more reliable. Mutas, Protosses are getting better and better at dealing with them, having the proper timings, just realizing that a base trade is pretty much what has to happen if you make more than 20 Mutas. And so they prepare for it, over-prepare for it, and then it's kind of a sticky situation.
So,
Mutas are going to be getting worse.
Also, like, to touch on what he said about the Death Ball versus Death Ball, I don't think that's your only alternative if you don't go Mutas. Correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but don't you try and trade at multiple points throughout the game, like, before it gets into the late Death Ball situation? Like, that's... If you're going ground... ZBP, you're not trying to wait until the end game where he has like a mothership and vortex before you engage, right? You're trading.
It depends. A lot of the time, Zergs are actually having to go Roach Hydra mid game quite frequently now because of the Immortal All-Ins. And what happens in that situation is, as long as you're a base ahead, like you should be, you keep trading until your Hydras die. Like, you keep resupplying on Roaches while heading towards Hive. And then once your Hydras die, you pull back and go completely defensive. But either way, you pretty much have to go towards Broodlords to kill them. You have to have an advantage to finish them off with ground units.
All right. Caller, thank you very much for your call. Hopefully you got at least some information out of there. And control those kids.
Wait, hang up the call now, please.
I did.
Yeah, because I told you to.
Yeah, I did, exactly. The moment you said that, I hit the little red button. I was like, man, forget about it. Thank you.
My kids again, Wheat.
Yeah. Area code 704, hello, welcome to Inside the Game, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. With the recent news of Nada not choosing to re-sign with OGS,
yes,
two parts, do you guys think that Koreans signing with foreign teams will be more common? And because of that, with, I guess, the free agent, I would say, movement of players, do you think a lack of an overall governing body will bite StarCraft 2 growth in the butt later on down the line?
I just...
And you guys have to answer in order of handsomeness, I would say.
Oh, really? Well, are we supposed to determine this, the order of handsomeness, or are you going
Who?
To tell us?
Oh, no. Up to you guys. Up to
what
you
do you
guys.
Mean? That's unfair, like, that we have to rate one another. Like, you're like the girlfriend. We're out getting our nails done, and she's like, let's rate each other on who's the prettiest. And then let's not do that. So, all right, from ugliest to most handsome, Pain User, go first. I'm just kidding. No.
Oh, you meant from tallest to shortest? Okay.
I did.
I don't like that one.
All right, what was the question? Because I totally just reconnected.
Actually, the question, you mentioned governing body, and I just feel like we it's just not something that we can even talk about. Like, we're almost just so far away from it. Yeah, exactly.
We're bringing up the esports players.
There was two things. He brought up NADA and the whole concept of foreigners, Koreans joining the foreign teams, which kind of appears like what's going to happen in that situation. And then the fact that the lack of a governing body could affect StarCraft II in the future. So let's talk about, what do you think about the Korean foreign teams? Pain user. All right, great. I've given my thoughts on it several times, but I think, quite frankly, that some of the Koreans who have turned down offers to join foreign teams are a bit crazy. I think it's a great opportunity for them. I think it's a great opportunity for the foreign teams, and I hope to see more of it. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's great for them. Financially, it's almost guaranteed to be better. Korean teams do not have a ton of money, and most of what they have, they put into paying living expenses and travel and just like providing for their players. Very, very few Korean players actually get salaries. So you're almost guaranteed to be making more money with a foreign team. You do give up the practice to an extent, and the practice environment is the bigger thing, because everyone's still looking to practice with their friends and former teammates online and stuff. But on the whole, I think most Koreans will want to join a foreign team. The problem is, I think it might get oversaturated pretty quick. Like, you have a lot of players who weren't Codes, weren't big names, like Sleep and Golden, and I don't know, there were others I'm forgetting, left teams, and then, like, someone like EG or Mouse Sports or one of the big foreign teams, they're not that interested. Korean players don't have a lot of marketability if they're not someone like MC. They may be the better player, but they're hard for fans to relate to, and they just don't draw a ton of attention, again, unless they're like an MC or a Marine King.
Very true. So
I think a lot of Korean players might drop out of the Korean teams and be like, I'm going to go get big foreign money. And they're like, we're not really all that interested. So I think we could see a lot of that happening.
Dragon's still looking for a team.
Yeah.
I could see a big free agent market when none of the teams all that interested in it.
Although, don't you think, Greg, at the same time that even though there are players with that lack of marketability, that they certainly have value elsewhere in terms of practice and like work ethic and bringing some of those things over with them to an organization out here if they happen to move into a team house or something like that?
Oh, they certainly do. There's a lot of value in them, and you do see people like Golden getting picked up by Light, but that isn't really what draws the big money. You don't get paid a ton for being a good practice partner. And someone like Golden, like, just, again, all these players who would be good practice partners, they are good. They have a good work ethic and whatnot. But you can't really send them to an MLG and have them win. And you can't put them on a show. So, like, where's the team going to get their value out of that? They have to justify spending a salary somehow or another. And with most of these players, they just really can't.
I would agree with that. For sure.
All right. I don't know anything else to add to it.
You know what else is crazy is my perception of what Korean teams were paying their players has been rocked over the last 6 months. I mean,
yeah, they get like nothing.
Yeah,
like literally nothing in most cases.
I had this, you know, grandiose image of Korean players, you know, being paid salaries and making a living, and from what we've come to understand, it's pretty much the same.
Not in StarCraft II.
No.
And probably
I StarCraft II for a little while. You know, I kind of had this weird association with old Brood War, and when I saw the first couple seasons of GSL, you know, I was looking at those guys, and I figured all of them were
living in that one room where everything is fucking candy and Willy Wonka's like that.
Exactly,
that'd be awesome.
Yep. All right. Any other comments on that in control?
No, we're good.
All right, thanks, sir, for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a couple more. Let's take this one right here. As we have Colin on the line. Colin, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi. I was wondering what you guys thought about late game Raven TVZs and the viability.
What, like, Hunter Seeker, just the Raven in general, auto turret?
Raven in general, Hunter Seeker, dropping turrets behind mineral lines, killing drones, etc.
I mean, just to break it down super fast, I mean, your Raven is 100, 200 a pop, then your Hunter Seeker is what? It's
a lot
125.
125, I think. Yeah.
That plus the upgrade, which is an additional 200, 200. Then you've got your tech lab. I mean, it's just the amount, the associated costs with Raven.
And you have to swap it. Don't forget that. You got to pick up that starport, and you got to put it down with the tech lab. And you guys laugh, okay?
That's an extra, like,
try it
right there.
Try it. Now, if you can mouse wheel that shit, okay? You can mouse wheel swap starport add-ons. Now we're cooking with fire.
Yeah, because I was in the game the other day.
The response along with Taylor's face was just fucking priceless right there. Keep going. Sorry, caller. Go ahead.
No problem. I was in the game the other day, and I was facing Ruff. You guys know who that is. Really cheesy player. He did a 4-starport Reaper and got like 18 Raven, and got like 18 Ravens and killed my bases. I finally figured out how to counter do it. It's just like Infestor Roach, and I Nidus-swarmed in his main, but he just killed so much and took all the bases on the map. He took like a quick third, floated over. This was on Shakira's Plateau, so he floated over to where my ground army couldn't hit, and I eventually had to get Mutas, but when you get Mutas, the Hunter Seeker missile just destroys you.
Yeah, do they have
Mass Raven, yeah, there's nothing that's inaccessible on Shakira's. Mass Raven isn't really good. It's too much gas and not enough real units and stuff. But Ravens as support for like a really turtly death ball kind of style, mostly mech focus, just anything where you just sit and defend and you get a max army and you go kill them, it's good because Hunter Seagull's pretty good against Broodlords. But on the whole, it's just too expensive to make a ton of them regularly.
Yeah, you just got to grind them down. Like, that's all their gas and their mana base, so the more they're being used, the quicker they get to a point where they're not worth anything. But if you, like, have this huge, like, sit back and build period of time, yeah, you're going to get Hunter Seeker in the face, man. In the face.
And you've got to swap it.
And you've got to swap it. That's right.
I mean, like, it's just, it's useless. The associated cost just to get one Hunter Seeker off is ludicrous, and the ability is terrible. It's not good. Compare it to a single Storm, as far
as, like...
It's
pretty good against Zergs who don't spread their Broodlords.
Yeah, but I mean, like, yeah, when do you run into that situation? Like, who wants a spell that's good for that?
I don't know, I see that quite a bit.
Ugh. I don't know. Hunter Seeker as a whole is just completely broken, in my opinion. It serves no purpose.
The biggest thing, I think, is, like, if you want to spend gas on a spellcaster that counters Broodlords, then you should get Ghosts and do everything else that Ghosts do. I mean...
Greg, Terrans are not going to use Ghosts, okay? Just get over it.
One day.
They need to add Stim to Vikings. That would solve everything. Then I could just make Marine Marauder Medevac Viking in all three matchups.
Extra 3 range, too. They don't shoot far enough.
Stim on Ghost would
swap.
Pretty cool.
Swap. The scroll wheel swap. Alright, did you have any perspectives from a Zerg? I mean, have you ever been in a game, Idra, where suddenly you've been like, oh my god, these Ravens are totally owning my mineral lines right now? And
well, no. I've had games where Hunter Seeker killed a bunch of units, and I was like, oh shit, that's kind of good. And then I remaxed and killed him because he didn't have any mana. Like,
yeah.
It's just, yeah. You have to play super, super defensive or be able to kill them in that one attack where you got all your Hunter Seekers off and killed all their units. And then you have to kill them before they can remax.
I have a reference. Head over to this YouTube channel I found out about a while ago. It's Husky or... Husky StarCraft, something like that. I don't know. He makes YouTube videos. There's a game between DeMuslim and Rhett on there on Daybreak that involves Hunter Seeker missiles. You might want to check it out.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, all right. Thanks, guys.
Fair enough.
Colin, thank you very much. Appreciate it. You know, I was completely distracted. I was watching Anna. I can actually tell what she's watching back there.
What is she watching?
I'm pretty sure that she's watching the Hunger
K-pop?
Games trailer. Yes.
She just read all three books, and she's pretty happy with them.
Yeah, I was right.
But we're going to see Chronicles soon, aren't we?
Seriously, though, how do you justify Hunter Seeker Missile? Like, Fungal, so much better. Storm, so much better. Both way cheaper.
Ghost,
come out of more
so much better
units.
Give us Ghosts, and you can have any spellcaster.
I totally agree, man. Ghosts are off the chain. They're really good units. They're amazing. I'm not going to deny that. But Ravens, they're just so bad.
The trade-off.
They serve their purpose as, like, an all-in unit and a detector against Protoss. But against Zerg, I mean, I guess it's nice for Baneling landmines, but generally you have enough orbitals anyway that you can just chain scan as you push across. So it's like...
Also, right? I mean,
this other thing is so good.
Like,
that I don't
okay, at least I tell it like it is, though. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We have enough orbitals that we can chain scan all the way across the map, so why would we ever, ever build a Raven? It's kind of like the Zerg Overseer. I mean, it's like... It's just...
Wait. No, it's a lot better than that.
Oh, it's better, but, like, it's still kind of a useless...
Listen, when I can explode a changeling to do, like, 1,000 building damage, then maybe we'll talk.
I'm not comparing an Overseer and a Raven. Ravens are way better.
I'm just fucking with you, man.
They're just both happen to be flying units.
Whoa!
That are for either race.
What? That was not okay.
Sorry. I know what happened.
Let's just pretend like nothing did happen.
Oh,
Mini
shit.
Mini just ran butt naked into
oh,
his computer.
Oh, shit. The delay showed me.
Oh, my God. I'm going to get in trouble.
Wait.
I'm going to, like, the VOD can't be posted. The show's ruined.
You have to go back and blur that
The
shit.
Worst thing was is that he was giggling the whole time. Like, all right, sorry. We're going to take our last call, then we're going to wrap up.
He just photobombed your show.
From that point in the show, we'll have to be killed. So let's go ahead and take our brother from down under. Goatlust, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. How's it going?
Oh, yeah, not bad, mate. What about yourself?
Doing good, man. Doing good. What's up?
There's a pun that should have been made about your naked son and then his name, Mini Wheat, but I'm not going to make it.
Thank you. I'm just trying to... I'm like that one caller. I'm just trying to forget that even happened right now.
Yeah.
Mini Wheat let the grain loose.
Wow. All right, pain user. Well, thanks for following up.
Wheat. That one's good. That one's
good. Oh. What's up, Goatlust?
Oh, yeah, not a lot. Is it you who writes those little things on that One More Game TV website? Each week before the show goes on?
It's not.
Oh, because whoever does it, he's like, oh, send you in your questions via Twitter. And I just thought, you must have never answered a question off Twitter on this show just about.
Only once or twice. I don't get that many. They usually come from the email, so that's why. Was that actually the official question for today? Or?
No, definitely not, mate. Okay.
Come on.
I'm going to
it's like a part A, part B, 1A, 1B, 1C, and then like 2.
I'm going to check up. I'll follow up on that for you.
All right, gents. So this was a bit of a hot topic about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I thought I'd take the chance to ask a question about it, seeing as Greg's here. But what do you think of all this whoop-de-doo about foreign seeds in the GSL and people saying, oh, fucking foreigners don't deserve it? And we've seen a few polls on Team Liquid and stuff, and it seems like a surprising amount of people think that at least Code S shouldn't have any seeds into it. And then there's other people who think that foreigners don't even deserve a Code A seed. So what do you guys think?
I'd agree with Code S, but it's a The big draw of GSL is that it's the most prestigious thing. It's the highest skill tournament. It's the one where you have to qualify for it. And it's just everything about it is supposed to be the peak of the competition within StarCraft II. And so to have direct invites into the highest stage of it seems a little bit iffy. And just in general, yeah, it's purely a marketing thing. They get a lot of viewership from the foreign market. I don't know if it surpasses the Korean viewership or not. I think it probably does. And so having foreign players in it is really, really good for them. So I think it'll keep happening. But, it's not really great for the integrity of the tournament. And we obviously haven't performed well enough to justify it. So I think it's a bad thing overall.
I can't get my head off the idea that Greg talked about. Like, it's just so clearly in the best interest of the GSL to include foreigners.
Yeah.
Because it brings so much viewership, but also if you don't do that, the path of a foreigner going through the qualification process and getting there, traveling there, being there, like, that's so alienating and so difficult that you'll probably just never have a foreigner. And that was okay in Brood War because the Koreans domestically were in love with Brood War. So the viewership was there, and people loved the game for that high-level play outside of Korea, like us non-Koreans. We still love the level of play, or we wish it was the highest all the time, but the game, GSL won't get the viewership necessary, right? So they need little things like this. So, I can't detach myself from how blatantly true that is to even talk about the hypothetical future where it's like just Koreans, because that would be GSL probably bankrupting themselves or, you know, 5 years down the road.
I'm definitely with the thought of how beneficial it is for the foreigners to be in it. We also discussed the location move of GSL before. Like, you know, we had a caller call in the other week, like, what if GSL was outside of Korea? But I think that's the other thing that really adds to sort of the hype, if you will, of GSL as well.
Well, another thing I think is really, really important is that they're truly establishing themselves now and building themselves as a global. They're setting up the stage for true global competition by bringing in these players from different locales, and having them try out. They can get an idea for who the best players are in the world for different areas. So if they want to truly have like a global competition at some point, they'll already have a pretty good idea of which players would be coming in from which different areas, and they can do the seeds accordingly. If they don't do that type of competition and they don't seed foreigners in, they would never really know how to rank them amongst the Koreans, and it would be very difficult to have like a truly international competition over there if they want to at some point.
And I think the better option for all of that, both for integrating foreigners into the GSL and for having an idea of which foreigners deserve to be involved if they do, like, another world tournament or something, but just to have international, online, regional qualifiers, like, even with an offline finals, regional offline finals, if they wanted to, and then the top X from that who are interested get paid flights and accommodation to come play in a GSL. It's obviously much more legitimate than just saying, okay, you two did good, you get to play CODES this season. It also involves the foreigners, which they obviously want and need, and it's a better solution in every way. The only problem is that they have to actually run it. I'm not sure why they don't do it, honestly.
Well, what do you think, Goatless, calling in as a spectator?
Well, I just think it's definitely something they need to keep doing, and it's just a no-brainer to bring in more viewers. I mean, who's going to watch a player of Hux level versus, you know, another one of those Code A or Code S people? And, how many people are going to watch that game if it was just another Korean playing versus if it was Huck? It's just a real no-brainer, isn't it, to have them in there?
Well, it's definitely harder.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, harder for the Koreans to make a name for themselves than it is for the foreigners to make a name for themselves in Korea, I feel like.
But, Greg, how you said about the integrity of the tournament and all that sort of stuff, in which way are you worried about the integrity of, like, say, Code A? Is it that, you know, there's going to be 28 Koreans instead of 32 and, you know, there could have been four more people who might have deserved that chance, that spot in there? Or is it like maybe a player like Drewby could get seeded in and then it'd be like a definite walkover for someone into the next round or something, and a Korean could, you know, go to the round of 32 instead of, like, dropping out round of 48 or something?
It's more just players who haven't qualified being there. Like, everyone else are in their spot there. Sen didn't. I'm not sure if Huck earned it the first time he got into Code A or not. I'm pretty sure he got a Code A seed. Like, pretty much everyone, except me and Jinro back in the open seasons, has gotten a seed in. We haven't earned the spot there. And all the Koreans did. It doesn't really seem fair.
Any follow-up to that, Gutless? Gutless?
That's it. Wondering what your perspective was on it as, like, pro players. Yeah, definitely interesting to hear. Thanks a lot.
No problem,
nice
sir.
Talking to you, mate. Thank you.
Thanks as always. See you
next
time.
Catch you later, guys.
Peace. Bye-bye. All right, and so we're going to go ahead and close the phone lines right there. Thanks once again. Scroll clicking. No, that's not it. Episode 30. There we go. So we finish things up. I'm going to go over to you, Pain User, to close us out.
All right. Big shout-outs to my team, Check 6, and all of our sponsors. Also, big shout-outs to IGN. I should be casting again there within the month. We'll see how that plays out, but the break should be over towards the end of the month here. And everybody, be sure and keep checking out our Team Arena Challenge 2, which is going on right now with IGN. It's pretty dope. And the EG Masters Cup coming up pretty soon. Everybody should definitely check that out as well, because that's going to be awesome. And I'm super stoked for all these team leagues. Hope you guys are too. I'm really enjoying the format. Thanks, guys, for being on the show. Thanks, Sweet, for hosting. And I will see you guys next week.
Excellent. Excellent. Sir Idra, thanks for joining us. Welcome back. And your turn to close.
Happy to be back. Should be on more regularly now, except the tournament season starting, so everyone will be missing every other week again. Thanks to my team, EG, all our sponsors, Intel, SteelSeries, Monster, Kingston, and Beyond Gaming.
Sapphire.
Big thanks to them. Sapphire? Are we supposed to say them now? Sapphire?
I don't know. I just felt like nitpicking you.
Thank you to Sapphire as well. I'm out of practice. I haven't gotten to do my sponsors recently. Thank you to all of them, and thank you to all our viewers for watching.
And Jeff?
That's it? What about Hobbs, Greg?
I haven't gotten to see him. He's providing you with all of his love right now.
My
you should be.
God.
You should be thanking
yeah.
him.
Yeah. I heard you taking good care of him over there, Jeff.
He's not even going to remember
you. In fact,
cool.
you've
cool
become a
cat
person since Idris left.
The cat thing about the cool thing about the cat, LOL, is that the cat loves Greg and Bryce. That's it. So when Bryce gets up to go to the kitchen or something, the cat will literally, like, it's so funny, it's 20 feet away and it's on the table and it's like, how should I hop down? Do I go down? There's a dog down there, though, but Bryce is in the kitchen. Bryce is in the kitchen, so it goes, meow, 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 meow. It just doesn't stop for like 3 hours. And the thing about the difference between a cat and a dog, like if a dog's going, you know, barking, you yell at it, you go, shut up, and it looks at you and it's like, oh, sorry. But a cat will make eye contact. Meow. 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 And you know what it's actually saying, which is like, what now, bitch? What now, bitch? What is just can't stand the tenacity of a cat sometimes. So
go cats.
Shout out to Hobbs. My own shout out. So obviously the Team Evil Geniuses, our sponsors, Intel, King Sniper X, SteelSeries, Monster Energy, Sapphire Beyond Gaming. It's completely out of order, but I hit them all. Thank you to all of them. Really excited about stuff. I mean, as it's been said, the Masters Cup is coming out. I'll be casting as well as Idra and DeMuslim and DG Wheat. We're really excited about that. Ooh. I love playing StarCraft 2, but I also really like casting it. So I'm kind of happy for that opportunity. But I also actually, this wouldn't be an in-control shout-out without saying, there's a couple other tournaments that have contacted me about casting, and I can't say who yet. But I'm going to do a little bit more casting. Not on a regular basis. I'm not quitting playing.
Right on.
But I'm going to cast a couple of cool little shindigs. I'm excited about that. And then people have said, you know, what's my next tournament? When can we see you? I'll be at the MLGs, I'll be at the IPLs. I'm going to try my best to qualify, obviously, but there's still open brackets for, I think, all of them, so even if I don't qualify, then I'm going to be there in the trenches fighting my way out, hopefully. And then just check out the EG streaming that we're doing right now, the practice sessions. I think they're really productive.
I want to second that. I like that stuff a lot. Thank you. I think it's pretty good. So keep.
And then also.
Yes, sir.
One more thing. Anna is going to be on a show called PureGoldPG.com. Hmm. It is going to talk about pageantry. I'm sure she'll bring up gaming, but it's a radio show that they're going to interview her on. So go to PureGoldPG.com. And it starts in 37 minutes, so if you guys want to tune in and hear her talk good stuff, there you go.
It's it's during the... Is this it? It's like a diamond? Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's that?
Okay, Anna Prosser, Miss Oregon, USA.
There you go.
There we go. Upcoming guests. Man, totally jealous. They had Chris Jericho on the show, and then Anna.
Sounds about right.
Dude. Chris Jericho is the man. Awesome. That's happened in 30-some minutes?
Yeah. Check it out.
Excellent. Excellent. They talk about sports, wrestling, TV, movies, just about anything else under the sun, and they keep it PG. Don't forget to tell your woman that.
I know. Anna's got the mouth of a sailor.
She's a little crazy like that. Looks like paying users left again, so I want to give a solid shout-out to Skype as you continue to... carry us through these times. I want to give a shout out to the Noodle Girl. Girl, you're always there for us every time. Oh, Pain User's back. I'm glad that you came for my shout out here.
What a disastrous night with Skype.
I was just shouting out Skype.
What's going on?
I want to give, of course, a shout out to the sponsors, SteelSeries and Six Pool Gaming. Help make this show possible. Tomorrow is live on 3 as well. And then last week, you guys will be my last week in this particular house. I move out of this house to sell this house. So I tried to get a different house.
Any word on where?
No. No, not yet.
Not yet, sons.
Well, we can't say yet. I think you may know, but we can't say yet. So.
Yeah, anyway. Well, I know. I always know.
You are a man who knows so much and control. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, and it's been a blast. Appreciate all the callers as well. Glad to have you back, Greg. Pain user, hopefully get your problems sorted out, because I'm guessing it's your headset, since I noticed you were wearing a competitor's headset and not a SteelSeries. I'm going to go ahead and just say that that was probably the reason. With that being said, thanks for joining us on Inside the Game, episode 30. We'll see you next time. Peace, bitches. We're out of here.
Adios.
Peace.